Today is Tuesday, March 13th, 2012. This is Pauline Adams, and I am interviewing Ruth Greenbaum, who has long been associated with the Friends of Kresge and the docents of Kresge Art Museum here at Michigan State University. She is also the widow of Dr. David Greenbaum, a former member of the faculty in the College of Human Medicine. First, I would like to start with your childhood, Ruth. That's a good beginning, isn't it? Tell us a little about that childhood. Things like where you were born, where you grew up, your sibling, your parents.
Okay, all right. I was born in Yonkers, New York, and I have five siblings. I am the baby of the siblings. In fact, my mother always called me her baby, probably up to the high school age anyway. But anyway, my father was a social work executive working in New York City. He was of the community but it doesn't matter.
No, it's
fine. Doesn't matter. And my mother, they both graduated from the Rochester University, and my mother taught Latin before she was married. And I was the last of the six of us. And I went to local schools the whole time I was in Yonkers. Then I went to University of Rochester myself, and I actually took social science. Also, I did piano as an elective at Eastman School of Music, which was a joy to do.
A first-rate school of music.
It is, Rochester. Definitely, yes.
So tell us a little about your college education. I mean, you told us where you went and what you majored in and what you were also interested in, the piano. Mm-hmm. Do you still play?
No, I don't. When I finished college, then I got into nursing, training in nursing, and there's no piano around. And so I really dropped it at that point. It was, you know, I would go back to it periodically. And when we moved here, when my son was old enough to, I think he was in middle school. No, it was, it was about that time. And he was getting piano lessons from a male piano teacher, which he liked very much. And so I decided I'd go back for a little while. But I didn't last very long. He apparently didn't like the fact that I was playing on an easy, active piano, and he wanted me to do on a hard one, and it just didn't work out for me.
So that's too bad.
So I just sort of played now and then, but since I have some arthritis in my fingers, I decided that it wasn't really getting very far.
And so, but you have a piano at home.
We do, and it's one that Dave's aunt's husband composed on.
Oh.
Yeah, it's an upright Steinway piano.
And does your son still play?
Oh, yes. He plays keyboard, jazz mainly, and blues, and he's down in Arizona working as a sound systems person and also plays with groups there periodically.
Oh, great. How did you meet Dave?
No, that's a big story.
And I love big stories.
You do. Okay. Dave graduated from, no, he didn't. Well, he was going to Williams College in Massachusetts, and he was accepted at the Western Reserve University Medical School. But it was during World War II. We were both taking classes in summer to finish early, and he had a suggestion from his father, who was in the Army, that he enlist rather than waiting to be
drafted.
And so he went into the service just as he was finishing Williams, and went down south, I think it was South Carolina, and got basic training. And it was a group of other individuals who had been to college and are planning on going someplace to get more education. But they had no idea where they were going to go when they finished the training. And were put on a train, and I guess the different ones went different ways, but the next thing he knew, he was ending up in Ohio at a base there on Lake Erie, and was there for a while, and then the next thing he knew, he was ordered to go to Western Reserve University, to the medical school. So therefore, he was getting his basic training in medical school through the government. Now, as far as I'm concerned, when I finished Rochester, I thought that maybe I'd like to go into social work, but I didn't want to take any more of my parents' money, so that I was thinking about what was I going to do to make money so that I could go. Well, that wasn't that easy at that point at all. And my father, who knew Francis Payne Bolton, who started the Cadet Nurse Corps, he knew her a little bit, and he sort of suggested, well, what would I think? Because he had worked with nurses as well as social workers. What would I think if I go into nursing? And talked about this nursing program. You get a master's degree if you've already finished college, even if you have had no nursing. Oh. So I applied to the two that gave that. One was Yale and one was Western Reserve. And Western Reserve accepted me first, so I didn't even bother to see whether Yale was going to accept me. And that's how we met at a dance. That we both sort of, I went with a friend who wanted to go, and he had gone with a friend to a lecture, and then they thought, well, let's go and see. And that's where we met. And from there on, for 2 years before we got married, we just
dated,
yes. And then, of course, the war ended, so that neither of us had to go into the service.
That's, first of all, you both sounded like obedient children doing what your parents suggested, and it worked so well.
It worked out very well.
What do you know of his life before you both met?
Well, he was brought up in Manhattan, New York, and he went to private schools. And then he went to Deerfield for his high school.
Deerfield Academy.
Which was quite something. That was quite strict in many ways. And you dressed formally, and you addressed your teachers as sir. And then when he went to Williams, it was entirely different.
Was he an only child?
No, he had a brother who was 3 years younger. His mother was an artist, a sculptor, and she was quite well known in the New York area, and her works have been spread over the United States.
And what was her name?
And her name was Dorothea Greenbaum. And his father was a lawyer. He was a lawyer in New York City. Then he was also in the service, both in the First World War and then in the Second World War. He was down in Washington, D.C. as a general. And that was a time that he had suggested that Dave enlist.
Mm-hmm. Did his brother enlist? Well, his brother was too young.
His brother was 3 years younger, and he actually got into the service afterwards in the early 50s and went to
Korea?
He went to South Korea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. tell us a little about Dave's life here before you came to Michigan State, because I know you didn't come here directly from marriage.
No. We went from Cleveland. I graduated before he did, and I went into pediatrics there right at the university, and I did that until... let me go back a little bit. He was still in the service. By the time we decided to get married, the war was over, and then he had a month in January to be on the OBGYN service, which was very rough, and they had to be supervised for 12 deliveries in the district, in the homes, and these were women that had already one child, and so they were short one person, and he got very little sleep. It was just a grueling 1 month period. And he probably had to deliver about 25 to get 12 supervised, because either the resident either got there too early or too late. But anyway, there was one. He developed tuberculosis later, and he knows just exactly where he developed it, because there was one home that was very run down, and there was a grandfather very close who was coughing, and he had not had a reaction to tuberculosis before this time, and then later on when he went to New York City, he had a very high reaction. So anyway, we got married the month after that, because he had no time between the time he graduated in June and the getting to New York City, where we was going to be in one of the hospitals there. So we spent the February. We went to Yonkers to get married. We were married in my home, and it was mainly family. And then our honeymoon was sort of broken up some. We spent some time in a cottage that Dave's parents had. And part-time, we went up to Williamstown for a short period of time. We also had to go back to Cleveland because I had been sick the second day of my exams to get a license. And so we had to go back, and he had developed also I can't think of the disease at the moment, but anyway, so he went...
Mononucleosis.
Yes. And so he went to bed while I was taking the exam, and then we went back, and then the last weekend of our honeymoon before we had to go back, his parents decided to meet us up at the cottage. He decided to burn some brush around the edge of the property, and it got out of control and went up the hill, the short hill, and we had to get the fire department to come. And I developed poison ivy from the smoke.
Oh, so I am a connoisseur of poison ivy. I've had so many bad cases.
I also had it for 3 months the first year I was in college, too. So I know all about it. Now they have treatment that works better.
So that was the beginning of your marriage.
That was, yes. And then we were in New York City. And he was at, I can't think of the hospital, but anyway, one of the hospitals, in fact, the one he was born in, for 2 years. And then he was going to one on a welfare island for two more years, and they did an X-ray and discovered that he did have tuberculosis. Yeah. So he was slapped down in Bellevue Hospital on his back, permanently on his back for 6 months. And I moved out of our apartment and went in and lived with his parents for 6 months, which was kind of interesting.
That's very diplomatic of you.
And then he was accepted for the treatment in the Veterans Hospital in Tupper Lake, New York, in the Adirondack Mountains. And so in January of that year, of the next year, we went up, and we were there for a year and a half. That was the fact that I wasn't... See, I was working, actually, in New York City. I was working in pediatrics. But when... At New York Hospital. When I had to go up with him, I applied to work as a tuberculosis nurse, which I was accepted. So I worked there while he was...
There. Well, that wasn't a bad arrangement.
No, it wasn't. No. Yeah. The only time it was hard was the night service. I didn't sleep well in the daytime. So.
Oh.
But anyway, yeah. I survived, and we survived, and he was able to go on a little trip. We took a cruise up the St. Lawrence.
Oh yes.
And out into the
Lake Erie.
No, what?
Was it Lake Erie?
No, we went out to the ocean.
Oh, you went out into the Atlantic.
Yes, And then for the last 4 months, we rented a top floor of a house, and he was recuperating then. And then we went back to New York City, and he worked in the... at Bellevue Hospital in the pulmonary service. Let me see.
So
we lived in New York City for that period of time. And then we went to Connecticut to the Veterans Hospital in East Haven. West Haven. And
so you finally got to Yale territory.
That's right. Yeah. Our son was born in New York before we went there. He was born in 52. And then when we were in Connecticut, our daughter was born in New Haven. And then after that, Dave decided that he wanted to get more internal medicine training and was accepted at the Bronx Veterans Hospital. Mm-hmm. So we went back to New York, and we lived in Yonkers, North Yonkers, instead of South Yonkers this time. And then when he was finished, while he was there, he was very interested in getting some training in gastroenterology from a physician that was special. And so he got his training as a gastroenterologist, and that's what the department that he was always in from then on, specialty.
That was his specialty.
Yeah.
And then when we
we're ready to go into practice. We looked around in the New England area, and then he heard about this new hospital in Flemington, New Jersey, which was a hospital that was developed by what they called the gentleman farmers that didn't want a county hospital. There was no hospital there. They didn't want a county hospital. They wanted a hospital that had specialists that were full-time salaried in the hospital, and the physicians that were in practice could bring their patients into the hospital, take care of them, or they could turn them over to them, or they could get consultation. And it was a very good practice. And he loved it very much there, and he developed. What was the important thing is that they had to go to one of the universities. Either at first he was going to New York City to I forget which one it was, but anyway, and then afterwards he was going down to Pennsylvania, to Philadelphia, to I forget which one. There were a couple different ones that he went to there.
And he went there as...
Yeah, once a week he would go. Yeah. I mean, once a month he would go there.
Yes, and see patients.
Well, they had services there, yes.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how long were you in
We were in New Jersey.
New Jersey.
We were in New Jersey for 12 years.
12 years?
Yes.
Oh, that was a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then things were changing in the hospital. But Medicare came in at that time, and things were changing medically and financially. And some of the physicians, like the surgeons and the radiologists, wanted to get higher pay. And things changed when that was changing. And Dave was asked to be head of the medical, the department. And he considered it, except that he had started a good teaching program, getting residents and students coming up from Philadelphia. And he wanted to have that continued. And they apparently did not want that. And so he asked Andy Hunt, who had been there as a pediatrician and then went to California. By that time, he was there. Andy Hunt was there for several years, and when they were starting the medical school here, he was asked to be the
first dean.
The first dean. So Dave contacted him. Where would be a good place to try to get into university teaching, medical school? And Andy said, why don't you come here and get interviewed?
Oh, that's when... So he came at the very beginning.
They started in, I guess, 64, 65, and we got here in 69. They had just started the 4-year program. They had the 2-year program first, and then they were just changing to the 4-year program when we got here.
Oh my! Yeah. So you were here really from the beginning mm-hmm. of the
yes,
mm-hmm. yeah. And do you remember any of his experiences while he was here teaching and practicing? What did he think of his experiences?
Oh, he loved it here. He loved teaching.
He did.
Yes, he did. And in the beginning, there was more teaching than there was patient care. But mm-hmm. as time went on, they needed the money from the practicing physicians, and so therefore there was more patient care. Which he also liked, and he was very good at it. I found recently a little note from a daughter of a patient that said how wonderful he was, that he considered the whole situation of the patient, the care, plus the understanding of what was going on. I'm not saying it.
You don't happen to have that note with
I
you?
I do have it, yes.
Oh, do you have it?
I don't have it with me.
Oh,
no, I didn't
see.
Bring it with me, but yeah. I do have it at home.
Oh. And that's very satisfying.
She said of about 20 doctors that took care of him, her father, that Dave was the only one that was really humane and taking in consideration the person, patient, other than just the treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that must have been.
And I've had many, many, many letters of complimenting his humor, his care, and his specialty.
So his experiences at Michigan State were good.
Very positive, yes.
Mm-hmm. When did he retire?
He retired in 96, I think it was. Yes, 96.
96.
Uh-huh.
Now, back to you.
Okay.
I know that you were closely associated with Kresge, mm-hmm. and their whole Friends of Kresge program and the docents. How did you get interested in that whole art aspect of Michigan State?
Well, I should go back because I was in pediatrics and I did pediatric part-time both in New Jersey and in here.
I worked
here at Sparrow Hospital on a part-time basis. And then when they got to the point where they wanted me to work every other weekend, Dave said no. And so I got into a couple of other things, family planning and OBGYN a little bit on a part-time basis. And then the Sparrow Hospital needed somebody to coordinate the cleft palate clinic, which was a clinic that evaluated children with a multidiscipline approach, with a plastic surgeon, a dentist, an orthodontist, a psychologist, nose, ear, and throat physician, and myself, a nurse. And I worked until 91, and then I retired.
Oh, so all that time you were really working
part-time. Yes,
part-time.
Yes, exactly.
As a pediatric nurse.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then someone mentioned that would I be interested in becoming a docent? And it's sort of fun because you take, you know, the first graders, you do color, and the second graders, you do shapes and lines, et cetera, et cetera. And so I thought maybe I could do that. I had no formal education in history of art.
Art, yeah.
But I thought, well, I've always been interested. My mother would take us to Metropolitan Museum of Art.
In New York.
In New York City a lot. And she did a little painting, and she did a little pottering, and she did a little, I should say more, she wrote poetry. And so she was, you know, getting me interested in the art side of life. So I thought, well, why don't I try it anyway? And so I did. I started almost right away and got the program when Carol Fisher was the educator. Mm-hmm. At Kresge Art Museum. So that, well, I was a docent for, I guess, 25 years. I guess.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then when Dave
retired,
I persuaded him to come in. And he loved it, and he loved the teaching of it, too. And he was good at it. He was better than I was, I think. I'm sure he was, yes. But anyway. So then toward the end, we didn't do as much, but we did outreach programs where we went out to the different facilities, elderly facilities, and did PowerPoint presentations. And
tell me about, can you remember any stories or experiences that you had while you were a docent of Kresge? After all, in all those years, 25 years, uh-huh. you must have a lot of stories.
Well, I spent a lot of time studying the different pieces that we had so that I could present them well. And I think I did enjoy the younger children. And that was mostly what we didn't tour adults very often. We did occasionally. We didn't do very much in high school either, but it was the lower classes that we did, the elementary school and the middle school. We had a theme for each age group.
Now, do you remember any specific incidents of a child reacting to a painting or to the other children or to you?
One of the things with the little kids, you sit them down in the beginning and just tell them what you're going to be doing, and then you start going around. And one of the things that you often do is do a little explaining and then ask some questions. And all, you know, put their hand up, and you call on them. Oh, I forgot what I was going to ask. There was one painting that I had that I asked what they looked, you know, have them look at it. What do you see? And there was one, who's the artist now? It was a modern artist. But anyway, it had a target. And he saw an H in one of the circles, and I've never seen it before. No one ever had seen it before, and from then on, I could always see that H in that painting.
Yes, well, that's the exciting thing about being with other people and discussing something. They see things you didn't see. You can show them things that they didn't see.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And children, do you think that children are more open to reacting to what they see?
Yes, yes. It's just when they get into the middle schools that they're a little more, you know, conscious of their peers. And so they're much more cautious. And it's harder to get things out of them.
Do you think that their experience in viewing the art was important to them in their vision of their world? Did it give them a better understanding or a more enlarged understanding?
I certainly hope so. I would say probably a good many of them. I'm sure that there were some that really didn't get that much out of it. But I think they enjoyed coming. They loved coming.
They did.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And did they interact a lot with each other as well as with the painting?
On and off. It varied with the group.
Was the teacher present?
Oh, yes. The teacher had to be present. Yes.
And did they in any way participate?
Not very much. Occasionally they did. Also, parents sometimes came.
Oh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was good.
That was good. And then we let the parents, you know, if they wanted to, sort of participate a little bit, but not very much. Mostly just standing back and taking it all in.
I see. Now, you as a docent had to prepare for each...
Oh, yes, yes.
There were
groups that we didn't do it alone. There were, in the beginning, there were always just about three that we could work in, three at a time, because the number of docents that we had. And so you would have scheduled time that you would be working, maybe two times a week, and you would always work with the same people during the whole year. So that we had to plan ahead of time. We planned. We had a week before. We had all the docents come to the museum and go around to see what the new exhibit was and discuss the pieces. And then the ones that were going to present, they would get together and discuss how they would present these pieces and the like.
So you did that.
So we prepared ahead of time. We discussed it with each other ahead of time at the museum there, looking at the art pieces.
Did you find those discussions helpful?
Oh, very much so. Oh, mm-hmm. Yes. And also I would go in and separately by myself just to go over the art that I wanted to present and really get into it and then do some research. at home just to be sure that I knew everything. You don't tell everything, but you have to know a lot more than what you tell.
That's good teaching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, did Dave also work mainly with young groups of
mm-hmm.
children?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, he did about the same groups. I mean, he loved kids anyway, and he enjoyed doing it with them. I remember he gave one story about the Roman floor that we had, and it was, one of the goddesses, you know, with the... I'll skip that one because I don't remember it well enough to at this moment. It's been a long time. My gosh.
I know. But it may come back to you before we finish.
Could be.
And
mm-hmm.
we can retrieve it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very good. Now, did the program tend to change towards the end in any way?
Well, they developed more programs.
No, Tell us about that.
Okay, well, we were doing programs for the middle school where we were doing the, first it was the Renaissance was second. It was before the Renaissance, then Renaissance, and then the more modern art work. So that we could bring them in at different times. They would have an hour that they would get they would have lectures, and then they would also have the group would break up, and some would go and do a work on paper, and then the others would tour the pieces that we were discussing.
I see. Now, I understand that recently, I don't know how recently, you started working with people who have memory problems.
Oh, yes.
Older
I was going
people.
To. There are two programs that they developed fairly recently. And this was when, I guess, MoMA in New York City, Museum of Modern Art, started this program called Elder Heart. And two of the docents went to New York City, spent a couple days getting educated on this program, and then came back and educated ones that wanted to work with this, the elder people. And there were probably about at least 12 of us that were doing this, and maybe even a little more. I can't remember the exact number, but anyway. And what we would do is talk over what specifically the program was presented. And the main thing to know about that program is that they would bring in from either, it would either be people who are at home, they're taken care of by their family. The family would have to bring them in.
Now, these are people suffering from dementia.
Dementia or also, or early Alzheimer's.
Early Alzheimer's.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then also the facilities like Birchham would and Bickford would especially interested in coming. They would have their caretakers. There would be a caretaker and then a driver who would come with them. And we'd sit them in front of an art piece. They don't stand at all. If they're in a wheelchair, they stay in their wheelchair. Otherwise, they sit down. And we just tell them, look at the art. Look at the piece in front of you for a minute. What do you see? And then you start seeing what they would present. Well, some of them don't say a word. They just sit there. Some will tell you what they see. And so you discuss the different things that they see, and then you point out the things that they didn't mention. And then you sort of discuss the piece as a whole, and then end up with asking them, for instance, well, do you like this? Do you want it? Would you like to take this piece and have it in your room or something like that? And sometimes we would be at a piece for about 15 minutes. So we only presented about three pieces.
I see.
And that would take sometimes maybe four pieces at the most.
Now, did they ever get excited about what they saw? Did they seem to get a spark of interest?
Oh, yes. Yes, some of them did. Some of them just sat there,
very passive.
Very passive. But others did get into it. And I'll tell you a story about the time that I was there. I was just helping out, but Dave was presenting a piece. The first piece that was presented, each person did a different one. And the first art piece was a portrait. And some of them remarked about that and whether they liked it or not. And portrait that wasn't, it wasn't exact the way a person looked, but you could recognize it.
Yeah, an impressionistic.
Impressionistic, that's right. So then we went to the second one, which David was presenting, and it was a painting that was done actually near where we lived in New Jersey on the Delaware River. And there was a picture of a apple tree on a sort of a cliff-like, and then below you could see the houses and the water and the hills on the other side of the river. And there was the one man that didn't say a word at the first one, and almost immediately he burst out, "That tree needs to be haircut." And then he explained that his father was a farmer and he lived on the farm with his parents, and that his father actually did trim apple trees. And it was fascinating to see the difference that, something like that would bring out. And that would happen with other patients, with something in the art piece would bring something out.
And make them a little more alive.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They loved company. They really did. They enjoyed it.
Did the same people come back time after time?
Some of them, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. But it depended on how big the group. If, for instance, Bertram had a number that wanted to come, and they could only bring so many, so they would sometimes bring different ones. But, yes, I saw the same person several times, for instance.
And did you ever hear from, say, the people at Bertram whether there was any carryover?
Some carryover, yes, they did. They would discuss it a little bit the next day, and sometimes nobody came up with anything, but sometimes, yes, a little bit. That's not permanent, but that gets them out, it gets them at a different viewpoint of things.
Yeah.
Then the other program that I did not get into, but it's called Gesso.
And I'm sorry, what is it?
Gesso. It's called Gesso.
How do you spell that?
Oh, dear. G-E-S-S-O. I'm not positive.
Well, okay.
I'm not sure. Anyway, it's a program for, I think it's fourth graders. Either fourth or fifth graders, and it takes the program that I know most about. There's two programs. One is, I think, a literature or something. I don't quote me on that, but the one is the math in art, and they developed a little pamphlet that the students in the school would work on, because what they would do, they went to the school with PowerPoint and discussed putting art math into art. And the students would have to, work on these papers that they have, the pamphlet that they have. And then they have to come to the whole class would come to the museum, and they would go to different art pieces that they could point out just what the art, the math is that was used in that piece. And it's a great program, and it's a new program that I think our docents developed. They presented it to a national it's almost international because that way Canada is involved. National Docent Program.
Oh.
And many places were very enthusiastic about it. So it's. I think it's something that may sort of grow.
And so it's still ongoing.
Well, we hope so with the new museum. Michael Rush is very interested in it, but he hasn't spoken to us about it since it was mentioned to him.
What would you, if I were to ask you to sum up your work with the Friends of Kresge, the docents? By the way, what is the relationship between the docents and the Friends of Kresge?
The Friends of Kresge was a group that was separate from the docents. There were some docents that were in that group, but many were not. They were just citizens of the area.
All right. Tell us.
They were more or less to raise money and to help support some of the things that we did that we needed money to do for. And also, they also bought pieces of art for the museum. That's separate than completely than the docents.
So it was really the Friends of Kresge was mainly a money, financial assistance to the museum, whereas the docents were a separate group.
Completely
separate and independent.
Yeah, that's right.
Did anyone at the university itself run the docent program?
Well, it was the education director.
I see. And she supervised, supervised it. It was Carol Fisher.
Yes. Carol Fisher was the one when I started, and then we had another one that came in after she left.
I see.
Carrie Wolf was her name.
She didn't stay long, did she?
Well, she stayed until Kresge closed.
Oh.
She had to leave because
really?
They didn't
Was
keep
there
her.
Someone in between another woman? No.
No.
Okay.
No. But she had to leave because it closed.
Right.
Now she's down in Jackson, working in a museum there.
Oh, she is down.
And getting married.
You were active both in Friends of Kresge and the docent program.
Well, I wasn't a member. I was a member of it by paying money into it. And you had, if you were a docent, you had to pay into it anyway. The dues. But I was not involved in their meetings.
And when you say their meetings, you mean Friends of Kresge?
Friends of Kresge. I was just in the docent program.
I see. Mm-hmm. And would you say it has been a good experience?
Oh, I loved it. It was great. I still would like to do the Elder Heart program if I don't have to go through a new education program.
I see.
And whether they would let me do that or not, Bonnie Mayer, who was running, you know, she was the one that instructed us. She and Betsy Fisher were the ones that were instructing us and carrying it on. And Bonnie and I have gotten together a couple times to discuss what we could do if the museum does not accept us as such. We haven't come up with anything specific at this point, but mm-hmm. we may try to do something. And if we do, if the Bonnie and I and a few others do not want to go through the docent program because it would be completely new and it would really we wouldn't need that as such, we would do it, but otherwise we won't.
Now, is there any pressure or input coming from the public schools in the area about continuing a program?
I've never gotten too much into the give and take of the schools. The schools used to come more often than before because of the financial situation.
In the schools,
they did not, and the time spent away from school were the two things that kept them from coming very often.
I see.
It was too bad because I think it was good programs.
Oh, yeah. What do you see as the role of art, not only at Michigan State, in the Michigan State community, but the wider community as well?
Well, I think that promoting art in the schools, no matter what, whether they go to museums or not, I think it's very important because I think it helps with their other studies as far as I've perceived anyway. I think that art at any point is a great thing to pursue for many people. Now, some people are just not interested at all, and you can't do anything much about that. But if you can stimulate people to get interested in art, I think they can get a lot more out of life itself, frankly. I love it. I think it's great.
So you see it as enhancing one's life.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, definitely. Yes.
What do you think the coming of the Broad Museum will mean to Michigan State and Greater East Lansing?
Well, maybe I should start about getting it in the first place.
Okay.
Dave and I had a dinner party. And after, as he put it, after a couple of glasses of wine, we were complaining about, as often we did, complaining about the size and the presentations, you know, that were difficult to do in such a museum, that we would like to get a new museum. So instead of just complaining about it, Dave and I decided, why don't we start a committee and see what we could do? Well, this is
about getting a replacement for Kresge.
Yes, that's right.
As a museum.
That's right. And we were not connected with MSU at first at all. And we were just a group of citizens in the area that were interested in doing something about getting a better place for showing the Kresge Art Museum collection. And we worked probably for about, well, Susan Bandis, we had come in as a consultant. She wasn't part of the membership of the BAM committee. The Better Art Museum Committee. Betsy Fisher thought that name up.
Oh, well, tell me, when did this occur?
We had the party in April of, April of 1999.
Okay.
And for about 2 years, we were not connected with MSU very much except Susan Bandis as an advisor. And then we realized that none of us had any money. We weren't going to, and we didn't really know a lot of people who did, and we realized that the university has the development program, and so therefore we got them involved, and that's how it grew from there. And then we got, I can't remember what year it was, but it was probably about 3 years, 3 to 4 years after we really were working on this, got who's president now?
Luana
Simon. She was provost then. And she said, well, she'd come, that she could only spend about half an hour, but she would come and talk to us and listen to us. And so, of course, the room that we had was very small. The Kresge Art Museum didn't have a big place unless we went right into the museum itself. So anyway, in this small room, here we were all sitting around, and we waited and waited, and she was late. And then when she came, we got talking, and she knew more about art museums and other colleges and universities than we ever thought she did. And
she's amazing that way, isn't she?
She is amazing that way. And she said that MSU could not give any money toward it, but that she was interested in it.
That was encouraging.
That was encouraging, yes. Yeah. And so things sort of turned around after that. And then the development worked harder and harder to try and see what they could do. And the College of Arts and Letters put in some money, and the university, I think, put in a little money to get architects to come up with plans. And there was one that I think it was the architect from Chicago that we chose. And we were very interested in that for a while, and we really liked that. It was addition to the museum, the building itself. And it would be two-story, and it would have a sculpture garden on the upper section of the building, and the top of the building, actually. And
so it really was a modification of Kresge,
yes,
the building,
yes,
Kresge,
yes,
where it stands,
yes, mm-hmm,
now.
Yes, mm-hmm, modern looking.
Yes.
And it was to the east of the building, and so that some of it would face the
river.
Then finally, in 07, they got a hold of, they had been talking to Broad. And finally, he decided that if they had a separate building away from the museum.
And away from Kresge.
And away from Kresge, that he would put in money toward it. And so things changed from then on, and we were pretty much out of it.
In other words, at that point, when he entered, mm-hmm, you exited.
Well, we were still involved a little bit, but we were mainly with the development people. We would discuss it, but from then on, it wasn't. It was much more the university that took over, and contentious feelings about this.
Between
what we thought we wanted and what Broad wanted. And when they had the breaking of the area,
the groundbreaking
yeah,
ceremony.
Yeah,
yes.
And when they had the ceremony over at Wharton, they hardly mentioned us at all. They just sort of in passing, they mentioned.
Even though you were the ones
who were the ones who got
who
it started.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah,
right. Uh-huh. And so we really feel that Broad has just taken over completely.
Yeah.
So many people in this area don't think much of contemporary art, which we're very concerned about. At one point, I don't think that Michael Rush, this is my opinion and,
yes,
Dave's opinion,
oh, sure,
was really knew what community he was getting into. Because he had he came to the, you were at it, that lecture that he gave for the retired faculty, and he talked all about contemporary art and what there was, everything was going to be contemporary art, and one of the members got up and said, well, what about the Kresge collection? And his remark, Michael's remark at that point, well, you just spoiled my lecture. So he was not thinking at all about the Kresge's
collection of art that they had, and that you've been working with all these years.
Yeah, that's right. And so that sort of got a lot of people, and it sort of spread, people realizing that, look, what's going to happen to the Kresge Art Museum collection? And it wasn't handled too well as far as dismissing the friends of Kresge, and also saying that the docents were not going to be docents there anymore, and didn't know what. We had no idea what was going to happen. We still don't know what's going to happen as far as what, you know, the docents that are trained and would like to continue. We don't know because they don't have a education person yet, and they're not talking about it at all. Absolutely. But also, you know, the fact that it's gotten around to the community, some people who put a lot of money into the Kresge Art Museum and their programs were very concerned about the fact that the collection was not going to be shown very much. And we had been promised earlier that there would be part of the museum that would have the collection.
The new museum
the
that
new
was
museum,
being built.
Yes.
The understanding was that the regular Kresge collection
would be
integrated
yes,
into
and
the...
And then finally it just turned out that...
It seemed from Michael Rush that it would not be part
of their
exhibit.
Right.
And what would happen to it? The collection,
well,
the present
that was
collection.
That was sort of, well, it was going to be used for teaching and things like that for the Department of Art. Yes, the historians, art historians.
Did the Department of Art play any role in the development of the new museum, take any role at all
not
in what was going on?
Not that I know of, no. Mm-hmm. No. They're changing their tune because there's been
much
outcry. Broad and the curator, and I don't know who else, because since the first time that we heard him, he has changed saying...
Michael has changed his tone by
saying that some of the collection will be shown, and the curator apparently tried to emphasize that the history of art is also very important in associating with contemporary art. So, but not everybody is convinced.
So there's still certain difficulties to be ironed out.
I'm afraid so. Yes.
Yeah.
That's one of the last things that Dave wrote about the museum was be careful what you wish for. And he was crying. He was trying to...
Who's he?
My husband, Dave. He was trying to see if there's one way of having the Kresge collection being shown someplace else. But then he said, of course, that's money, and so therefore probably won't happen.
So it's still up in the air.
It's still up in the air.
With that collection, the Kresge present collection, will be housed and shown.
How much is it going to be shown?
Mm-hmm.
Don't like to end on that note.
No, and not. And do you think that the docent group has sort of given up on working with Rush?
No, they are. They get together periodically. They have.
They do.
They have a book group where they discuss books, art books, or artists' books. They have a get together once in a while. They're getting together this month at the public library. I think this is the second time they're asking all the docents if they want to come just to discuss things. I don't think that they have any communication, or not much anyway, from the administration or from the director, Michael Rush. Mm-hmm. I think the chairman is continuing to get the group together.
The chairman of the docent.
And she has talked to Michael Rush a couple of times.
And she has.
But I don't think there's any idea of what...
Of working
what's
together.
What's going to happen as far as the docents that are wanting to continue.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of docents that are definitely just don't want to do it as contemporary. They're not that interested in contemporary art.
How many docents do you think are still actively involved in their group? Like you say, you get together once
I haven't really got much communication on how many. I don't know.
You don't know?
No, no. I think there's a moderate amount.
And will you attend the get-together this month?
Probably not. Because I know perfectly well that I'm not going to be doing any docenting unless I can do the Elder Heart program without the education that would be necessary, that they feel that would be necessary. And I did go to the first one, but I'm not sure I'm going to get to the second one.
Mm-hmm. So things are still very much up in the air.
Very much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you have any other relationship at present with Michigan State?
No, I don't. One other thing that I was doing was this English
for foreign students,
and I had a class every Wednesday afternoon for a couple of hours, and that was a joy to do. It was a fun thing to do, and I got to know the foreign students quite well. Not only just the students, but it was also wives or husbands of students.
Now, is this a program that's, I think, administered in part by Dottie Schmidt?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. In fact, I just stopped because of Dave's illness.
Yeah.
That's why I stopped. And I have thinking possibly of starting up in the fall if I can have students come to the house. I'm not going to try and go down to campus again. It's a little.
I'm sure they can arrange that.
I'm sure they can, yes.
I know.
There are some of the people that do it at home.
That's right.
But I'm going to wait until the fall to do that.
And so that would be another relationship you've had with the university mm-hmm. all
yeah.
along.
Yeah. Right.
And thinking of restarting.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. now.
My other association with MSU was that Dave was doing a study on medicine, and it was a program that he got patients in experimenting with a new drug, and associated with gastroenterology, and he had a nurse that was good at smoothing with the patients that they were in interviewing that, but she was not good in getting the information down in the proper way to have it studied. And so he wanted me to sort of look it over, and then he decided that maybe I should take that part over. And so I worked with him, and then Robert Smith, who also is internal medicine with psychological bendings. And he was doing a study, and so he wanted me to sort of do the same sort of thing as I did for Dave. So I did some help with research projects here on campus.
At the medical school.
At the medical school, uh-huh, yeah.
So
that was my association.
Oh, well,
so actually, I did work. I mean, I got paid for that.
Yeah, so you're really a retiree from Michigan
right.
State. I didn't realize that. Do you think you would do more of that, if asked?
Well, Bob Smith, when he came in the fall, and said that he was getting a new INH grant, and he thought possibly later on I might get into something similar to what I did before, but he wasn't sure at all, and he hadn't said very much since, so I may be going into a different mode than he
yeah.
thought at first. So I have no idea, but if it is, it would just be part-time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah. So you still have potentially continuing ties
mm-hmm.
with Michigan State. And that's wonderful. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about? Anything at all that comes to mind? It
yeah,
could
dear.
Be.
No, it's just that Dave and I really got along beautifully. In fact, I think he realized when I started working for him that we could work together more than he thought that we could work together.
Which is very rare in a marriage.
And we worked, and then we did things together after that, and we really enjoyed each other. And he always wanted to include me in things. He did not want to exclude me. I feel very fortunate that I had the 64 and a half years of time with him. It really grew. Our care for each other grew as we got older, especially during after the kids were brought up. We know we would have our different ideas about bringing up kids, and that always brought in a little bit of contention. But other than that, we got along very well, and I certainly miss him terribly now that he's gone.
Sure. I'm sure.
But we did a lot of traveling. He took two sabbaticals, one in Kenya for 6 months.
Wow.
Which was quite an experience. And our daughter Liz came with us. And she was going to take art, but then they found out that all the art they were teaching was American or European, and that's not what she'd gone for. So somebody suggested that she work in the animal orphanage there, and she had a wonderful time there. So we had a good experience there. We did some traveling. At weekends, we would go out of Kenya, and out of Nairobi and go to places. And I would... he would be working in the hospital, and I also got involved in the pediatric section, more or less as a play therapist. But so I would be going to the hospital very
Tell
often.
Tell me, was there any connection between that experience in Nairobi, Kenya, with Michigan State?
As far as I'm concerned, I don't think so.
No, in other words, this is something that you set up on your own, you and Dave.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it was not connected with any program at Michigan State.
Not specifically. He was doing a study there. But, you know, it was a study that on abdominal pain that he had been doing anyway, you know, here. So as far as he's concerned.
Yes.
But as far as I'm concerned, it had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Then the other one was in Australia. Oh. For 6 months.
Oh.
And that was great. And we loved that. And I also got involved there. And they developed a study so that I could be working at the hospital all the time. So I would go to the hospital every time he did. And then we also had a great time.
And that was, again, not related specifically to any program at Michigan State.
Other than it was a GI, and he was doing study and also
it's
there.
It's study related to his work here.
To his work here, that's right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's what sabbaticals should be anyway.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So those were two exciting.
Very, very good.
Exciting and satisfying.
Yeah. In fact, we went back to Australia three years later because there was a World Congress of Gastroenterology there. So we were there for a week. And then we decided to take two more weeks, and we rented a car and went from Nairobi to Adelaide. And from then Adelaide along the coastline to Melbourne, and then up the little coastline to Sydney, and that was a great trip. I really enjoyed it tremendously.
So you have many.
Oh yeah, many
memories.
Very much so, definitely. Yes, and many pictures to go along with it.
I bet. To stimulate those memories.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anything else you'd like
I can't think of anything particular.
Well, I want to thank you so much. Ruth?
I will say that we've enjoyed being here in East Lansing. And when we talked many times, we had a friend who was a professor here at MSU that always talked about going someplace else when you retired. And they would discuss different places with us. And then when he retired, they did move away. And they went down south, and we went down to visit them, and they were so miserable, so unhappy. They wanted us to come down and join them. We said, no way. they finally ended up going out to Washington, the state of Seattle, where their daughter was.
Well, yeah, to be near their daughter.
Yeah, but we always said that we wanted to be here where our friends are, and I'm so happy that we have, because they've been so helpful to
yes.
me.
Yes, and it's home
and
to you
now. And it's home
now.
To me now. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, that's a wonderful note to end on. And
this has been fun.
Oh, good. Yes. I'm glad, and I enjoyed it myself. I hope you did, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did.
So thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.